So in this session, we are going to be hearing Ashley speak on step 10. So come on up, Ashley.
Thank you so much. Good evening. Okay, there's 9 Southerners in the room. Let's try that again. Good evening. Yes, I am an alcoholic. My name is Ashley. I love that music. I want to thank the committee again and Arisa for her leadership of 12 years and thank our profound speakers for their courage and their vulnerability. It's been really intense, hey? I mean, we never know the stories with which people are walking around. And the way we excavate ourselves here is very remarkable to me, but we do it for a new freedom and a new happiness. And also, some of the women I sponsor are here, and I want to thank them for traveling in from out of state, one from as far as California. She wins the little prize. And some other special people have shown up just spontaneously. And all of you for making the effort and advocating your own best interests by showing up to a conference of Alcoholics Anonymous. So well done to you. I have a sobriety date. It's the 30th of December, 2006. That also happens to be my papa's belly button birthday, and he was an alcoholic. And he didn't have the gift of AA. He lived in Appalachia in eastern Kentucky, and his second wife, Cynthia, told me that when they fussed, he sometimes could drive across the river over to West Virginia where there was an AA meeting. And I don't know what he heard or if anyone ever passed him a big book, but I feel like my sobriety date is also a gift from him, and I'm not going to give it away. So I'm really, it has additional depth and meaning for me, my sobriety date. I also have a home group. It's the Beacon Group. I don't go as much as I recommend you go to your home group. And I have a sponsor. I love going over to her house. She's a beautiful woman. She's very principled, and she's also very gentle, and I love how those things go together. And we're going to talk about step 10, which says, continue to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, probably admitted it. Promptly admitted it. And one of the ways that the 12 steps were introduced to me was that there's this informal step zero, right? This crap has got to stop. It has got to stop. But then I heard in steps 1, 2, and 3, I make peace with the God of my understanding. And in steps 4, 5, 6, and 7, I make peace with myself. And in steps 8 and 9, I make peace with others. And in steps 10, 11, and 12, I grow in peace. And I think a theme for step 10 today may be peace. You know, it's a peace step. And step 10 for me, it guides my relationship with my higher power. It guides my relationship with myself. It can guide my relationship with others. And it guides my social conduct. And as much as it is a step of reflection, it's also an on my feet kind of step because it says constantly, constantly, constantly throughout the day. And so it's the step that becomes well-grooved, and I use it constantly throughout the day. And I just want to note, there's apparently a couple of jokesters who have written the General Service Office and the Board of Trustees that they think step 11 is in the wrong place in the big book and then it needs to be moved. Because, you know, step 10 is a daytime step, and Arisa's going to talk about step 11, which says when we retire, which can be both at night and when we finish work, you know, when we stop working. But these are two distinct steps. As synergistic as they are, steps 10 and 11, we are going to talk about step 10 separately and individually for a reason. But I also think that step 10 works very beautifully with the ninth step promises because it does at the beginning of the step say, this thought brings us. So what is this thought? This thought is what's in the previous verse, which is the ninth step promises. But I'm getting a little ahead of myself. So before I start reading, because the text is quite short on step 10, so I want to read it in its entirety from the big book, I want to start with the promises of step 10, because we've heard a lot of really in-depth emotional sharing, and so why do we do all of this stuff? It's like my mom, when I made my amends to her, she said, why do you do all this stuff? You know, and I said, because it makes me feel better. So what is feeling better look and sound like? What can it be? And on page 85, it says at the bottom, Much is already said about receiving strength, inspiration, and direction from Him who has all knowledge and power. If we have carefully followed directions, and I like to say I because otherwise I relate it more to you than to me, and it's pretty bold to say I. It's like, really me? It's very audacious. I have begun to sense the flow of His Spirit into me. To some extent, I have become God conscious. I have begun to develop this vital sixth sense. And I like to remind myself that vital means essential for life. It's necessary. So if it's essential for life, without it, I'm not alive or I'm dead. And one of the things I like to remind myself is that in step one, where I'm powerless and my life is unmanageable, I'm unconscious in my disease. And so here, I'm starting to become conscious again. I'm waking up. My spirit is waking up. And of course, in the second part of step 11, it says, upon awakening. So all these really beautiful things are starting to happen in my life with step 10. So that's why we do this. So let's just start with the text a little bit. And it says on page 84, this thought, so the ninth step promises, brings, I arrive to step 10, which suggests, you know, it's suggested when I jump out of an airplane that I use a parachute, to continue, to carry on, to take personal inventory, not their inventory, as Larcine so beautifully illustrated in her conversation with her sponsor, to take personal inventory and continue to set right any new mistakes as I go along. I vigorously commenced this way of living as I cleaned up the past. I have entered the world of the Spirit, inspiration. My next function is to grow in understanding and effectiveness. And I have a friend in AA who says, my next function is to grow. This is not an overnight matter. It should continue for my lifetime. Continue to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear when, of course not if, but when these crop up like a chin hair, they always come back. I ask God at once to remove them. I discuss them with somebody immediately and make amends quickly if I have harmed someone. Then I resolutely turn my thoughts to someone I can help. Love and tolerance of others is our code. And a code is something, it's a plan, right? It's something essential to protect my property and my life. And my property I like to think of as my relationships, you know, something that I care about a lot. And so obviously what inheres in this paragraph is the previous nine steps. And so I'm asked to wash, rinse, and repeat, to constantly review these steps. And so one of the things I want to share first is all of the verbs, and this is, I've learned this directly from my sponsor. None of this is original material. And also, as my sponsor says, don't let anybody read your big book for you. This is just my relationship with the text. Please read it for yourself. You know, ask what it means to you. And so it says continue four times, as everybody knows, in the first paragraph. Like, it's relentless. It doesn't let up. Just continue. And it's a construction project, right? It's not a destruction project. And I think it relates to this in the 12 and 12, when it says that the credit side of the ledger is a terrible day indeed when there's nothing on the credit side. It's a healthy self-esteem building project too. This isn't just about where I'm bad, wrong, and awful. My first meeting that I ever chaired, I chaired it on how the 10th step can build healthy self-esteem, and my sponsor said, Ashley, no flow charts. I was a little intense when I first came in. Hopefully I'm still eager, but not quite as intense. And so one of the things I like to do with a 10th step is think about where I am with the previous nine steps. And so I just want to tell a couple little stories about that, because there's the spot check inventory, there's the occasional housekeeping, and then there's going on a retreat to do a more intensive long-term review. And obviously all that's laid out in the 10th step and the 12 and 12. So you know, sometimes when I do a 10th step, if I've dropped my basket or I've come undone, it's like, wow, am I having a step one situation? Am I powerless? Is my life unmanageable? Am I trying to manipulate you or control you because really I don't want to deal with my own anxiety? Is my emotional life becoming unmanageable by me because I really need for you to be something different at this moment? Do I need to readmit my powerlessness and feel my feelings? You know, so in my spot check inventory, am I at step one? And a step two story is my former husband, with whom I have a beautiful relationship, because those kinds of things are possible in Alcoholics Anonymous. We closed our marriage with so much dignity, with so much tenderness, with so much respect. We didn't crap in the nest. It doesn't have to end that way. We actually went to the place where we got married and stood on the very spot where we took our vows and redid our vows as chosen family, and talked about what it would look like to retain a special parking spot in each other's hearts. You know, we slept in the marital bed. It was an sexually abstinent relationship, but it was so fond and so tender. And then he started to date 6 weeks later. One of us didn't have a sponsor. And that was hard on me. You know, that was hard on me. But he's not American, he's Scottish, and I've spent a lot of time in Scotland. I don't know of a town called Larsine. And, sorry. And when I always told him that he could come home to our house in America, that he would always have a place there. And eventually he did break up with that woman and said that it had been cold, which was his way of making amends, which of course I accepted. And then he came home again, and he had this real funny look on his face. And we talked all day, and then I said, I'm going to go take my chosen nieces and nephews out for ice cream. And he said, but we need to talk. And I said, we've been talking all day. And he was like, and I said, oh my gosh, are you getting married? And he shook his head no, and sorry for the language, but I just kind of, you know, was fumbling. And I said, oh my gosh, are you knocked up? And he shook his head yes. He shook his head yes. And we had chosen not to have children, and this was a real foundational part of our belief system together. And he said, will you please be the godmother? Spot check inventory. The 10th step is about being on my feet. It's about being a woman in recovery who has grace and poise and dignity, and being able to look back with moral imagination on the woman I knew I would have wanted to be in that moment. And I said, of course I will be. And then I spoke to what I knew was his greatest fear, and I said, and you're going to be a wonderful daddy. And then I said, I have a commitment to those kids, and on my way to take them out to ice cream, I called my chosen brother, who's also in recovery, and cussed the paint off the wall on his voicemail. Because who said I was perfect, right? I had a lot of feelings about it. And then I went to New York, and I had a commitment there. And by the time I got to this hotel and a hotel room in this place I'd never been, I was absolutely beside myself. For some reason, this just really upset me. I was very distraught, because what I realized is I hadn't let go of an old idea that his still needed to look like mine, and that our social beliefs were still going to be congruent, because if he now wanted to have children and I still didn't, what did that say about me? I was going to have to be autonomous with this belief somehow. And so I was in the bathtub, and I was having a snot-slinging cry, and I was just inconsolable, and in an hour and 15 minutes, I had to be all dressed up and out in public. And so I called my friend Toby, who to me is one of those people who doesn't think that Alcoholics Anonymous is a spiritual program. He knows that it is, and he was on speakerphone with a couple of other helpful people. And I knew I was, after that 10th step, that I was in a second step problem, because I reviewed where am I in the previous 9 steps. And Toby said to me, Ashley, in these moments, there is no piece of literature from AA. There really is no step. There's no piece of advice from a sponsor. There's nothing you can hear at a meeting. It is down. It is down to your higher power in you. And what is your answer to be? And I got out of the bathtub, and I stretched myself out wet and naked on the floor and totally surrendered to the God of my understanding, and let go once more of all of those old ideas. And that had started with a 10th step. And I was completely restored to good orderly direction. And I peeled myself off that floor and I got dressed and I went out and I was composed and, you know, acquitted myself admirably of the duties that I had that evening. And there are pictures of me, and you would never know that I had been a hot mess an hour prior. And then another story about that young man is, you know, he had a career that was pretty dangerous, and he had an accident, again, after our marriage, and I felt it. I felt it when the car crashed. And I thought, what do I do? I'm no longer his wife. But he was in America. His family was in Scotland. And I said, the right thing to do is to show up. The right thing to do is to show up. So I was in Tennessee, and I got on a plane, and I went to Texas. And it was tricky, you know, because I wasn't technically his family anymore. So was I allowed into the trauma unit? Did I have the rights to say yes to certain medical treatments? You know, what was my role? But I just showed up with love, and I just kept working that 10th step. How can I grow in understanding and effectiveness? How do I best serve thee? How do I best serve thee? You know, and I get those feelings right now when I think about it, because it was about balance and boundaries and, you know, what is my place here? But it was just to serve. And my prayer was not so much thy will be done, but open my heart to your will. Because I didn't really know what God's will for me was, because I didn't know if I was wife, if I was former wife. I mean, my name had been wife for 14 years. I didn't know what they were going to call me when I got there. You know, and then the only time I left his bed, and when he opened his eyes, just like Anthony shared earlier, when he opened his eyes after his concussion and being unconscious for a while, he said, I knew you'd be here. I knew you'd be here. And I went to a meeting. It was the only time I left the hospital, and I just put my forearms on the table and put my forehead on my arms and cried the entire meeting. I don't even think I introduced myself. But that's what the 10th step taught me, you know, how can I best serve thee? So that's one of the ways that I work the 10th step, is where am I in the previous 9 steps? And, you know, then it goes on to say, we have ceased fighting anything or everyone, but that doesn't include men who speak badly of women in Alcoholics Anonymous, which is kind of a joke, but I am going to tell a story about that. No, it doesn't mean that we don't speak up, because we're still allowed to have a voice. And, you know, Arisa said earlier, peacekeepers don't go to peaceful places, they go to hostile places. So I don't want us to misinterpret this line that we have ceased fighting to mean that we don't stand for something. Because I think in Alcoholics Anonymous, especially with our traditions and concepts of service, that I can learn to stand for something without standing against my fellows. And I use the traditions and the concepts when I take my inventory. So in that 10th tradition, it says that I have no opinion on outside issues, hence I never get drawn into public controversy, but that doesn't mean that I don't have conflict. There's a difference between having conflict and being controversial. Because I learn in the 12 concepts and in the general warranties of the conference, which are on the wall over there, not to be personally punitive. So I can disagree with you, but not be personally punitive and stand on principle rather than making it about your personality. So I was at a conference, and this gentleman was speaking about steps 6 and 7, and he was talking about the 7th step prayer, and it says, you can have all of me, good and bad. And he made this joke, and he talked about prostituted women, and he referred to them by an old pejorative term that's not used anymore. And it would be like saying the R word or another pejorative term for people who were not his race. And then he said, and I thought they were bad, but it turns out that, you know, cocaine was bad or something like that. And everybody laughed. Everybody laughed. And except for me. And I went up to him after, and I did a spot check inventory, and I was like, I'm really uncomfortable in my body. You know, what if he had made this joke about Jews? Nobody would have laughed. But sometimes it's still okay in AA to laugh about jokes about some groups, including women, especially when men are behaving badly in their alcoholism. And so I stood in the line afterwards to thank the speaker, and I said, hey, you know, and I talked to somebody about it beforehand. I talked to another man who knows him well, and I talked to some other women, because it says to talk to somebody, and not just the people who are going to agree with me. And I said, you know, I would love to have a conversation with you. And he said, oh, anything I can do to help, which I got a big kick out of. And so I talked to my sponsor, and I also talked to a couple of other men. And when he and I spoke on the phone, to say he wasn't pleased would be an understatement. And he began to take my inventory and say I was oversensitive and ask if I had a history of sexual abuse and all of that kind of stuff. You know, really ugly, really ugly. And then he finally conceded. He said, you know, I've told that joke hundreds of times, and no one has ever had the courage to say anything to me about it. And so that was his way of saying he might take a look at it. And but that's the kind of person I am in AA, because we have common welfare and everyone should be comfortable here, because we also have a third tradition which says that anyone who has a desire to stop drinking is welcome in Alcoholics Anonymous. And that should be all people. And we shouldn't make fun of people, and we shouldn't use pejorative terms, and we should be accessible to all kinds of folks. And so, you know, that was a spot check inventory for me, and an application of the traditions, and an application of Concept 5, which says the minority voice should speak up and be given due consideration. And not it's not for everybody, I assure you. You know, and I do not relish doing that. And then when I spoke to my outside help, I said, you know, I don't know that it made a difference. And he said, Ashley, you will haunt him every time he tries to tell that joke. You know, and another time, and I don't know about you, but when I start to squirm in my seat in a meeting of AA and the traditions are not being adhered to, when someone brings in outside literature or they start to share at great length about their personal religious affiliation or an outside political issue, it's going to be election season soon. I mean, what do you do about that? It's the chairperson's responsibility to keep the meeting focused on the principles of Alcoholics Anonymous, and that's Concept 9, right? Good personal leadership at all service levels is a necessity, and we have delegated the authority to run a principled meeting of AA to the chairperson. That's you know, that they're our trusted servant in concept in Tradition 2 and in Concept 2. But what do you do? You know, I do a spot check inventory, and it's like, if they're not going to speak up, I'm going to say something and say, it's not an indictment, it's just information. It's just information, because we have a primary purpose here, which is to carry the message to the alcoholic who still suffer, and not talk about politics, and not talk about institutions, and not talk about religion. So I just wanted to touch base on that, because that is a part of my 10th step, on my feet, on my feet. And why do we do this, you know? Because it makes the rest of the days worthwhile, except when I run to my car and my hands are sweaty afterwards. So some examples of how I've used step 10 recently. You know, and you get a lot of the good stories, right? It's like my friend Steve L. was sharing from the podium, and his wife Connie was there, and she's also sober, and he was crying, and his heart was so tender and soft, and she said, why don't you bring that guy home sometime? You know, so we kind of stand up here and tell some of the good stories about ourselves, so I have to tell you some of my step 10 failure stories as well. But my partner and I, he is Swiss, and we were in Switzerland, oh my gosh, this was a spot check inventory. Oh my word. He was in Switzerland, and you know, he's a child of the Alps, and so he was on a ski, doing his annual ski tour, which fills his cup. He's a very free person. I mean, he is just a free bird, that Martin. And the more free I can let him be, the more he brings back to our relationship, right? The fuller his cup is, and the fuller our cup is as a couple. And so he was doing his thing, and you know, on the top of an Alp, and we had no contact. There was no way for us to be in touch. And this was really when the pandemic was roiling our country, and I was listening to one of my favorite speakers, and I got a text message that the international borders were closing. And for the America, they had closed, and that meant that probably within a scant few days, the borders to Europe would also close. And I had to make a decision about whether or not I was going to grab my passport and, without him being able to talk with me about it, fly myself to Switzerland. Because otherwise, there was a possibility we would be separated for an unknown amount of time. And so in my spot check inventory, I used concept 3, which says the right of decision makes effective leadership possible. And in particular, what it says in that concept is that the person who has information that the other person doesn't have is endowed with the right to make the best decision they know to make in the moment. And so without talking to my partner, I packed my bag and I flew to Switzerland. And when he came down from that mountain, "Hi, honey, I'm here." We didn't have a place to stay. But man, those borders closed 12 hours later. And we moved in with his brother and his wife and their 4 children. And we were basement dwellers for 4 months. It did have a window. And his daughter lived in that basement room with us for 4 months. So there were 5 children in this house, and school was out, and I did an inventory every night. It went well. It went well. You know, but if I didn't know how to review myself, and if I hadn't known that I had an 11th step to live by every morning, I don't know if our relationship would have made it on that kind of distance with that kind of stress. So many couples who were separated were stressed. And the next time I had to do an inventory on my feet was when the lockdown lifted, and we were going to go to Berlin, and he suggested that we live with his daughter's mother in a 2-room apartment. And we sat on a bench in the back garden, and he said, "So the lockdown is lifted. Nina needs to go back to school in Berlin. And the mom has said that we are welcome to live with her." And we have a very cooperative relationship. We use one of the traditions that talks about how we cooperate, and we're not affiliated. We do not endorse or finance each other, but we do have cooperation. And, today, because of miracles, I have a very good working relationship with that mom. And it's very different from what divorce looked like in my alcoholic family system growing up. But we have common welfare, and occasionally we actually have unity. And I was sitting on this bench, and I thought, I have got to figure out how to guide my social conduct in this moment. And that's what a step 10 on my feet looks like. Because I could have said, "What the hell are you talking about? You're nuts, you're bananas, your culture is weird. I don't understand you. How could you ask this? This is impossible." You know, I really could have freaked out. And that, as an American, would have been totally understandable, because they're pretty far out, those Swiss and those Germans. You know, and instead I thought, what tradition applies? What concept applies? You know, this is about the welfare of a child. This is about common welfare. This is about my sobriety and my emotional sobriety. And so I realized I was being asked to participate in an informed group conscience. And it's not just a group conscience, it's an informed group conscience. And I'm asked to analyze, what information do I have? What do I not know? And what down the road will I want to have known that I didn't? And that's like, it's a 2-room apartment with a small kitchen, thank you, and we would live in the daughter's bedroom. This is a recipe for failure for an alcoholic. I wouldn't have a place to do my step 11 in the morning, you know? And so then I thought, participation is the key to harmony, which is concept 4. I have to participate right now, or I'm totally allowing these people to victimize me. And so then again, it was about concept 5, and I'm the minority voice, and I have to have the courage and advocate my own best interests and say, this is a very kind and generous thing. What expansive spirits you people have. And I'm sorry to say, and it may be disappointing, but it's not an arrangement that's appropriate for me at this time. And if you want to stay there, I can understand that, but I'll need to get other housing for myself. Man, I'm so glad that I spoke up and I did it that way. Now, I could go over there for supper, I can go over there for playtime, but I couldn't live there. And so that was the time I used Step 10 on my feet. Woo-wee! And now I stay there because she has a partner and she goes and she stays with her partner and Martin and I stay there. But it's different and it's you know, 6 years into our relationship and it's different and I have my own autonomous relationship with the mom. But my goodness. You know, a lot is asked of Anthony in his own way and a lot is asked of me in my own way. So there's a lot of kindness in step 10, you know, it says we will react sanely and normally, and this is about kind of alcohol, but how do we act sanely and normally in situations that are not necessarily sane and normal? So as I mentioned on Thursday, my mom had an undiagnosed and untreated illness most of my life, and when she was diagnosed, I had the opportunity to be with her in her illness, and I had to think on my feet a lot with someone who was unwell and whose behavior was erratic and volatile and depressed and sad. And, you know, when I came in 2006 and I made my amends to her in 2008, and I had the opportunity to grow in effectiveness and understanding with her and to absolutely love her where she was. And one of the stories I was thinking about in terms of applying step 10 to being with her and loving her was I don't know how I got this, but I called them the yum-yums. She loved her diazepams or lorazepams or whatever they're called. And, she just loved them. And it's really sad, but it's also kind of funny. So she did get to the point where she realized that she needed to detox off the pills, and but she was desperate for them. And so we went and we bought Tic Tacs and put them in a pill bottle and told them that they were the pills and that she could have as many as she wanted until she got to detox, and she put them in her bra. And she was just chewing those things, and you can have another one. Yes, you can have another one. And they were Tic Tacs because the disease is cunning, baffling, and powerful. And so she went to detox for the pills, and the detox triggered a psychotic episode, and she had to be transferred to the emergency room before we got her into behavioral health. And I was with her in the emergency room, and we were walking together. She was very, very restless, and her limbs were moving, and so I decided we would get up and walk, and she had on her robe, and she had the IV pole, and we were walking, and she thought we were in Eastern Kentucky and that it was snowing. And we were just walking the halls of the emergency room department. And I thought, and she was like saying hello to people and saying hello to her neighbors. And I thought, I'm just going to be here with her. You know, I'm like, what do I do? And so I just talked with her like, and she was a child. And we were just walking Montgomery Avenue in Ashland, Kentucky. You know, and it says we will intuitively know how to handle situations. And, you know, we... receiving strength, inspiration, and direction from him who has all knowledge and power. And that's part of the 10th step promises. You know, I wasn't a bewildered little girl in that moment who was terrified by a mother who was experiencing psychosis. I was a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous in that moment who was living the 10th step promises. And I have a lot of stories like that about my mom. You know, but I also have a lot of stories about chosen family, because God has a sense of humor and gives us the family we're born with. And then along the way, we come into the rooms and we meet Samantha, who at a meeting does a share and afterwards says, I don't know if that made any sense. And I look at her and I say, babe, I have no idea who you are, and you just made all the sense in the world to me, and I want to be your friend. And she looks at me and says, you came into the meeting not wearing shoes, and I want to be your friend. And we become chosen family, and she becomes Mama, and my mom becomes Mama to her. And, you know, part of living the 10th step is we don't have to create any more wreckage of our past. We don't have to create any more wreckage of our past. And so I do things proactively today, and Bill hints at this in the 11th step in the 12 and 12. You know, I get to have moral imagination. I get to imagine what I would have wanted to have done differently. And so when my chosen family and I get together and have these glorious vacations, you know, I don't get to redo my childhood, but I can have a beautiful adulthood with a recreated family. We talk about what memories we want to create together. And so what that looks like is, for example, we were in the Great Smoky Mountain National Park for New Year's, and we rented a big old cabin. There were 19 of us, because you've taught me how to be in groups. I was so isolated when I got here. And I could use service in AA to isolate as well. I'd be the one over there cleaning out the cabinet, going through the archives of the business meetings and organizing them. True story. But I've learned how to be one amongst many, you know. And so we will sit on our first dinner together, and everyone will share a memory that they would really like to make that they would otherwise be disappointed if they didn't have a chance to make. And, you know, Sam said, I want to have coffee all together before we run out for our hike at least once. And I said, I want some quiet time with my chosen sisters, and so the menfolk can go do something and leave me alone with the ladies. And, you know, somebody wants to go on a run at sunrise, and somebody says, I want to watch the Thanksgiving Day parade for an hour. And, you know, and we are intentional. We are intentional, because the 10th step can be also about being intentional. It can be about proactive and not just looking back and saying, oh, gee, I didn't flush the toilet when I was in the airport bathroom today. I feel so crummy about myself. True story. You know, to which, by the way, my sponsor, who has a spiritual answer for everything, you know, I did that, and I thought it didn't flush. And I was like, did it flush? Did it not flush? I was so torn up. I was so torn up about myself. And it was just number one. I was so torn up. So I call my sponsor, and she's like, Ashley, why didn't you think God was taking care of you? Why were you in such a hurry that you didn't think God had you? Why did you drop God's hand? If you don't have that kind of sponsor, I hope you can get one, right? What's the question? God is the answer. God is the answer. So another way that Step 10 has been really helpful to me this year since my mom died is that, what is it with men and dating so soon? My pop started to date, and this wasn't my favorite thing that's ever happened. And, you know, I just thought about, you know, my sponsor is really big on, and I'm not so good at this sometimes with the women I sponsor, leave them out of it. Just leave the other person out of it entirely when reviewing my day. Like, make I statements and feeling words, and I don't want to hear the he said, she said. And so when I left him out of it, what I was left with was I was having opinions. And it wasn't his behavior that was hurting me. It was my opinion of what he was doing that was hurting me. You know, and that's a tradition 10 thing, my opinion on his outside issue. And also tradition 4, in that he's autonomous and he's grown and he gets to do it his way. He gets to do it his way. Now, if he started to spend mom's estate or do other things that affected me, because we say there's a second part to tradition 4. Except in matters affecting another group or AA as a whole. So except when it affected me or as our family as a whole. You know, because I'm a part of my mom's estate, or if he did other things that implicated me, or, you know, publicly or whatever, then I would have the opportunity to visit with him and say, hey, let's talk about this. But if he's doing something privately, I don't get an opinion. You know, and also, was I placing myself in unqualified authority over him? So that 10th step really allowed me to, my friends were angrier at him than I was. Seriously, I mean, I got an earful from Laura, and I'm like, wow, that's where I could be. I'm so glad I'm not. I'm so glad I'm not. And then he knocked it off. You know, and what was beautiful about that is I didn't ding our relationship. I didn't damage our relationship. You know, and he's my buddy, and we text every day, and we FaceTime a couple times a week, and I go see him, and we're traveling together for his birthday, and he comes up here and he stays with Martin and me, and I try not to shoulder surf when he's on his phone to supervise whether or not he's texting women. So So there's a lot in the 12 and 12 about checking our motives. And, you know, Bill goes so deep in this 10th step in the 12 and 12. I love it. It's just relentless. It's, you know, it says on page 94, this odd trait of mind and emotion, this perverse wish to hide a bad motive underneath a good one, permeates human affairs from top to bottom. This subtle and elusive kind of self-righteousness can underlie the smallest act or thought. And then it goes on to say, and I love this, this is like, it's because step 10 is character building, right? He says, learning daily to spot, admit, correct. It's like that wash, rinse, and repeat that I mentioned. Spot, admit, correct these flaws, the essence of character building and good living. So, you know, it also says restraint of tongue and pen, and dare we add mouse. The other day, I really wanted to share something with Martin. It came up, and it was really on the tip of my tongue. So Nina and he, the 10-year-old, my bonus daughter, they speak a lot of Swiss German in the house. And so sometimes instead of being this, the triangle within the circle, we can be straight lines. And so they're a point here and here, and I'm over here. So they can be having their conversations in Swiss German, and then I'll jump in and interrupt Nina, and Martin and I are talking, and she's left out, and so on and so forth, instead of being a circle where it's shared, and there's common welfare and unity and full participation. And I can really contribute to that. And then sometimes when the two of them are talking, hey man, that's my excuse to back off, which is really isolating in disguise, or just choosing to not to participate. So I got this idea the other day, sometimes dangerous for an alcoholic to get an idea, that I was gonna share with Martin that I can feel invisible in the house. And my rationale for this was, oh, it would be just, I'm just being transparent that this is my lived reality under our roof. And that, you know, he probably wants to know this. And I thought about restraint of tongue and pen, you know, and this line in it's why it's so beautiful to be familiar with the literature where it says this, you know, perverse notion that I can disguise a bad motive under a good one. And I sat with this for 3 days. For 3 days, I held my tongue. I didn't have much else to say because I so wanted to blurt it out. But then I got to a place of true neutrality about it, you know. And it does say in the 10th step promises that we will be placed in a place of neutrality. And I thought, you know, I actually really want to know what his experience is when he's interrupted by me, or when he's interrupted by Nina, and when he gets left out, or when he feels torn between us. And I got really curious. And when my motive evaporated, and then it was like, hey, I have something on my mind, and I'm really curious about what this is like for you. And it opened him up to share. And then I said, would you be interested in hearing how I experience some of our world too? And then it was clean, and it was fair, and it was egalitarian. So that restraint of tongue and pen is really valuable. And sometimes the answer is just don't say it. You know, just don't say it. We have to know if people can hear us and if they can see us, because some people just can't. Some people just can't. You know, my sister and I have had a very variable relationship, My sister walks in the room, and I just love her. She looks good. She smells good. I bury my face in her neck. She texts me, and the cortisol dump happens, right? Like, I just get on edge and very frightened. I mean, I get scared of her because there's a lot of history there. But when I see her in person, she feels really safe. And so I have to know to say appropriate things at appropriate times with appropriate people and have that sense of discernment, right? So the restraint of tongue and pen is an important piece. So I want to talk a little bit more about this. We can talk about alcohol, right? We are in AA. So I want to tell a story about, for this time, sanity will have returned. So it's important to point out that we get our sanity back. You know, think is one of our slogans. And sometimes we see, think, which doesn't mean obsess. It just means think. We can think things through. And when we have our sanity back, and Arisa's going to talk a lot about how much we have the power to think clearly in our step 11. It says, sanity will have returned. We're going to do this in I because it's so audacious and vulnerable and hard. I will seldom be interested in liquor. If tempted, I recoil as if from a hot flame. I react sanely and normally. It's sane twice. I think it's emphasized. And I will find that this has happened automatically, reflexively, you know, just. I will see that my new attitude toward liquor has been given. It's a gift, given, passive, without any thought or effort on my part. It just comes. That is the miracle of it. I am not fighting it. Neither am I avoiding temptation. I feel as though I had been placed in a position of neutrality, safe. Oh, that's all I ever wanted, was just to feel safe, right? Just to feel safe and protected. I have not even sworn off. Instead, the problem has been removed. What a journey from step one, when I was in the problem. It does not exist, poof, for us. I am neither cocky nor am I afraid. After all that fear in step four, that is my experience. This is how I react, so long as I keep in fit spiritual condition. So my family and I, we spend a lot of time in the Democratic Republic of Congo. We have a long relationship with that country. I started going there in 2008. And when I was there, it's actually exactly almost, is it 3 years ago now? It's almost 3 years ago now. I was walking in the very remote part of the Central African rainforest. It takes 3 days to get there from the capital, and fewer non-native people have been to this part of the rainforest than have been to outer space. It's a pretty unique part of the world. And I'd gotten up at 3:20 in the morning. I had done my recovery readings, as I do in my little tent with my head torch. Very hard to read that day because the head torch was dim. And I had started to walk on this very narrow transect in the forest to go see a great ape that were there to follow. And because my head torch wasn't working, I was not very confident with walking. When I walk in the dark a lot, it's like I came down at Half Dome once in Yosemite under a full moon. It's not advisable, but I did it. And in the rainforest, I usually have this head torch, and it works very well. We do this every day, and sometimes there's some moonlight filtering down through the canopy of the trees, but there was no moon that day and morning, and I really couldn't see well, and I was trying to walk very fast to keep up with the tracker ahead of me, who did have a bright headlamp, and I was trying to sort of borrow, so to speak, light from him. And I went through a tunnel of foliage, which really made it very black, and I was almost crawling, and when I came out from that foliage, I was very far behind the tracker. So I broke into a powerful stride to catch up with him, and I wasn't looking down at the ground, I was looking ahead. And I tripped over something called a lucuro tree root, and as I fell, my leg broke in four places. And when my leg broke, I also damaged my peroneal nerve on the side of my knee, and it paralyzed my right foot. And I felt my leg break as it was breaking, and I cried out, and when I hit the ground, I had this DNA inside of me, this impression of what it took me to get to that spot in the rainforest. And I knew what it was going to take to get out. But I repressed it because it was too horrifying to consider. So I kind of dragged my mangled, bent leg over to a tree and rested my back against it. And Maud, a research assistant, came running over. And Malaika and Dieu merci, whose name means thanks be to God, came over. And I said to Dieu merci and Malaika, this is a tragedy. And they were paralyzed and frozen and in instant trauma. But Malaika went running back to camp, which was already an hour and a half away, to go wake Martin up. And, you know, thus began a really difficult and exceedingly painful odyssey that lasted 67 hours before I got medical attention. And when Martin got there, and 3 hours later, He had the satellite phone with him, which we do have for emergencies, but it wouldn't work because the tree canopy was so dense it interfered with the ability to get a signal. And what Dieu Merci did was he sat in this kind of lion's pose, like a yoga pose, bolstering my legs so the bones wouldn't rattle, which in a normal yoga class is really uncomfortable. And he sat that way for 5 hours and didn't flinch. And it made me think about how in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, we sit and listen to each other's stories, which often include a lot of pain. And when Maud started to say to me, oh, help is coming, I said to her, honey, I can't have any expectations. I can't have any expectations because I'm going to set myself up to be really disappointed because help is not coming. You know, and I thought about how sometimes we say, you know, we expect miracles, of course, but also we say, I really can't have expectations about what people are going to do, you know, or that help is coming. And a gentleman named Papa Jean showed up. Someone had run to get him, and he had to, with his bare hands, set the bones of my leg. This was really, really painful. This was really painful. But what I knew is that I had a God of my understanding, and that step two was with me. Because in that step two, I am given the freedom to define that God however I need to define it, and that I can revise that understanding, I can change it, I can fire God, I can get a different God, I can update God. But I have decided already in my step three that I have a God that suffers with me. I have a God that suffers with me. And that's all I had, that 67 hours. Was higher power suffering with me, and just all I could do was breathe in and breathe out, breathe in and breathe out. I mean, I howled, I bit a stick, my back arched, I was in shock, I begged to pass out, and I couldn't. What does this have to do with what I just read in the 10th step? The men eventually came back, they had a piece of fabric, they laid me on it, they carried me out of the rainforest for hours, they put me back in camp. They set me down on a cot. It collapsed. It was almost funny. Papa Jean had to reset my bones again. They carried me into the village. I was laying in the dirt. It was all hell broke loose. You know, they love a scene. It was exciting. There was something going on. You know, there's not a lot going on in that part of Congo. And everybody was screaming and hollering and looking at me and Mama Ashley, and there was a hullabaloo, and someone said, Mama Ashley, Latoka, bush alcohol. It's the booze they make from corn mash, painkiller. If tempted, we recoil as if from a hot flame. I reacted sanely and normally. I found that this happened automatically. It was my attitude toward liquor, and it came without any thought or effort on my part. That was the miracle of it. I was not fighting. I was not avoiding temptation. I'd been placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. The problem had been removed. It did not exist for me. That was my experience. I mean, I just said no thank you. It was not even an issue. Because I knew that people had buried their children sober in Alcoholics Anonymous, that people had lost fortunes, that they'd endured climate disaster, that they'd, you know, sat with beloved sponsors who passed away, that people had forgiven murderers. I mean, it was easy to stay sober. And I also knew I would come to a future meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous and say to a newcomer, there is nothing a drink will make better. It is absolutely possible to stay sober in this program, and AA works. AA works. And then they tried to get me to get on a motorbike. And Martin said, honey, you have to bend your leg. And my leg didn't bend. It was bent like a boomerang. And so this, you know, everybody's screaming and hollering, and this one guy, he happened to have a really good idea, and Martin said, you, everybody quiet down. What do you have to say? And he said, put her on it backwards. So the idea was that the driver would ride facing forward and I would ride like this and stick my leg out and hold it. And Martin said, let's do that. And then someone said, well, somebody has to ride facing forward because when she passes out, she's going to fall off. And so Martin said, well, somebody sober, because that corn mash goes around and there's nobody sober in Coca Lapori at 2:30 in the afternoon. Crickets. Everybody shut up. And then I said, I want a man of God. Where did that go? I hadn't squeaked all day except to scream my lungs out. You know, I hadn't spoken. I want a man of God. And this guy, Papa Maradona, came forward. He didn't go home to change his clothes. He didn't go over to the bush to go tinkle. He didn't go tell his family that he was going to ride 6 hours on a motorbike with a woman with a broken leg who was hemorrhaging to death. He just got on the motorbike and rode with me. 6 hours later, and then 67 hours later, I mean, someone vomited on me. It was a terrible experience, but my higher power was suffering with me. And I got through it, and the program and the spirit and the fellowship and the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous were with me the entire way. I don't know how else I did it, you know? And I'd heard something that said, when you get to your edge, soften, you know? And that conscious contact with God, as I understand God, right? It was just like, breathe in, breathe out, breathe in, breathe out, breathe in, breathe out. So the 10th step promises we can stay sober. There's another Congo story I want to tell you, because where it says, every day is the day we must carry the vision of God's will into all our activities. How can I best serve thee? Thy will, not mine, be done. These are the thoughts that must go with us constantly, constantly, all the time, all the time, all the time. We can exercise our willpower along this line, all we wish. It is the proper use of will. There are several places in our literature where it talks about the proper use of will. And it says willpower is fine as far as it will go. It just has its limitations. So we take this little bush plane into the bush, and we load it with supplies. And then when it comes out, it carries things like bonobo poop and other valuable things for research. But it doesn't weigh as much when we leave the rainforest. And so we often try to offer a seat on the plane to someone who might need medical attention. And often these people have never left the rainforest. And so it's always a big adventure for someone to ask for a seat on the plane. And one day we were in our camp, and a young man came to the camp, and he said, you know, my grandmother is very ill. Could she ride on the bush plane with you? And we said, of course she may. And he said, her name is Mama Seraphin, Seraphin, like a seraphim angel, right? And so the time came, and we walked out of camp the hours that we walk, and then we rode the motorbike the hours that we ride through the rainforest, and we got to the little village where the bush plane lands in a little, you know, patch that's been bushwhacked. And Mama Seraphin shows up, and her friend comes up and says, Mama Seraphin has tuberculosis, infectious pulmonary disease, lethal. And there's also such a thing as multiple drug resistant tuberculosis, which I happen to know about. And she's going to ride in a small aluminum can with us. And so this is time for a 10th step inventory, a spot check inventory, about whether or not this is reasonable. And an informed group conscience, tradition 2, comes to mind as I start taking my spot check inventory. Is it reasonable to have someone with an infectious lung disease in a small container with other people who will be exposed to TB? I don't know. So it becomes about step 11. Where am I in the 12 steps when I think about my step 10 spot check? What step do I need? I need conscious contact with my higher power. What is the most kind, loving thing I can do? What is your will for me? How can I best serve thee? What is the correct use of my will in this moment? So we all talked about it, and we decided that the risk of exposure for the other four people who were going to be on the plane was too great, and that Mama Seraphin regrettably could not ride with us. Devastating to make that decision. Devastating. It's a death sentence for her. So then the pilot lands, and I realize that we actually haven't had a total group conscience because we haven't included him. So it's kind of a minority voice, right? Concept 5. So we include him, and he says, I don't ask people what they have, I just fly them. I felt so ashamed. So we get her on the plane, and she looks like an HIV/AIDS patient from the 80s and 90s. I mean, just this big. You know, we weigh her, she weighs like 87 pounds. So Mama Seraphine gets on the airplane. I put a mask on her. She, you know, she wears it like this. I mean, she's a woman of the rainforest. She's not going to wear a mask. She sits in the rear seat, and we sit as far away from her as we can, and she's looking down at her beloved rainforest. What an awesome experience for her to see it from this perspective. And Martin and I are playing hangman, and as one does, and I look back at her, and she's dead. She's dead. She's died over her rainforest. How can I best serve thee? Strength, inspiration, and direction from him who has all knowledge and power. If I've carefully followed directions, I have begun to sense the flow of his spirit into me. I mean, I felt the spirit of God so strongly. And I just sat there and I talked to her spirit. I didn't know what else to do, so I just, it was like, peace be with you. Peace be with you. May you be inhaled into the infinite mercy of God. And I just sat and talked with her spirit, and her spirit talked to mine, where we were in this little tiny bush plane. And I didn't tell anybody else that she had passed away, because what were they going to do except for it all become the big hullabaloo? And we had 5 more hours on that airplane until we got to Kinshasa, where the Congolese dysfunction was going to go berserk. So why get everybody all in the kerfuffle until it was absolutely necessary? So I just looked at her and looked at her and looked at her and sat with God and felt total peace about it. And then the other passenger we had went, elle est mort, she is dead. And then all hell broke loose, and that was that. I mean, God puts us, a lot is asked of us, and God puts us in these situations, you know, and how do you say that something like that is beautiful? Except it was beautiful until her family extorted us. It's a crazy country, but they were just poor and couldn't pay for the funeral. I mean, it is what it is, right? It is what it is. So one of the ways I'm practicing step 10 right now too with one of my friends is I'm leaving her alone. I'm leaving her alone, right? Because she's very sad that I have moved away. As I said, Martin is Swiss, and so I spend a lot of time there, and then I'm up here in Cambridge. And I have to do a spot check inventory with her all the time because we were really close. She was over at my house 4 to 5 times a week. I was over at her house once or twice a week having supper with her kids. We did Zumba together. We traveled together. We've been to Scotland and to Paris and to London and Las Vegas, and she was really close with my mom. And since I left, she's been really, really distant, you know, and I was nagging her, you know, do you want to come over? Do you want to come for Christmas? Do you want to go to the Smokies? Do you want to do this? And every time I have that, I have to realize that I am on her back. And, you know, my first sponsor said to me, get off her back, get out of her way, give her a good letting alone, get into the steps, get to a meeting, and work with somebody else. But it comes up in me so frequently because I have a sense of loss about it. And so I just have to stay in my step 10 with her and realize that she has the dignity of grieving me in her own way, and I shouldn't push, 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 push. I shouldn't push, 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 push. And that's hard, you know. And again, where am I in my step 10 and the other 9 steps? I'm at my step 1 and I'm powerless over her. And when I'm pushing, I'm trying to medicate my own sense of loss with her. I'm trying to medicate my own sense of loss with her. How much time do I have left? I don't think that I have that much more to say. Let me just see here. Oh, so I have one other little thing to say, which is about one of the things I've learned is that with my step 10 is it's not so much about being correct as it is about connecting with people. You know, because at first it was like, you know, if I'm going to do step 10, I'm going to make myself better and right. But as Arisa was saying earlier, in our step 6 and 7, it's not about doing more, it's about letting go. The spiritual life is not so much about addition as it is about subtraction for me today. And so it's not about how do I correct my mistakes, is how do I connect with other people and let go of things? Do I want to be in community? And I'm less interested today in being right and more interested in being in truth. And truth is about being in relationship with people. And these have been some of the gifts that Step 10 has given me. It's made me a lot less rigid. It's made me more flexible in my thinking. And what another big gift for me of Step 10 is I have these fabulous dreams now. You know, sometimes they're grief dreams and I'll be crying in my sleep. And sometimes there are these spiritual dreams where I connect with people who have died, like my great aunt Pauline, who lived on a poor farm in Appalachia and was one of the loves of my life when I was a child. But I think it's that work in the spirit, as I've read so many times now, we've become God conscious, we've developed this vital sixth sense. You know, I work the program and then the program works on me. It works on me. It works on me. I am very different from the way I was when I came into Alcoholics Anonymous. I was a rager. Telemarketers would hang up on me. That's a true story. There's a hole in my kitchen wall from my fist. I put a calendar over it so I could remind myself how far I've come. I was working with some people. I wasn't known to them. They weren't known to me. It was a play, and it was an actor's troupe, and 50% had to be members, and I was the lone non-member. And we were playing a game where you try to guess the person about whom you're talking, and you ask questions like, if this person were a fruit, what kind of fruit would they be? If this person were a tree, what kind of tree would they be? And they happened to be talking about me, and the person said, if this person were a body of water, what body of water would they be? And the person said, Lake Superior. I mean, I was aloof. I was intimidating. Apparently, my rage preceded me into the room. And people were so afraid of me. And then I would get angry that they were afraid of me because I was so hurt on the inside. And I just wanted people to see how much pain I was in. And I had so much shame that I was choked on my shame, and I was embarrassed to admit how much shame I had. Alcoholics Anonymous has completely changed my personality. And my first sponsor, who brought me in 2006, she would sit with me and she would go, you have changed so much. Do you know how much you have changed? I mean, my ability to be with my mother and walk with her in a hallway at Vanderbilt Hospital and talk to those invisible neighbors while she thought she had on a fur coat when it was snowing in eastern Kentucky. You know, in all the ways that a child should never see their mother in their mental illness, with her crazy hair and her mismatched pajamas. That is a tenderness that these 10th step promises have worked on my spirit. I said when I stood up, in steps 1, 2, and 3, we make peace with the God of our understanding. In steps 4, 5, 6, and 7, we make peace with ourselves. In steps 8 and 9, we make peace with others. In steps 10, 11, and 12, we grow in peace. This step has been a step of great peace for me, and I hope that it might be for you as well. Thank you for letting me share. I'll just leave it.